The following is provided for general information and educational purposes. Please do not apply any of the advice given without first consulting your financial planner or tax professional to make sure it's right for you and your financial situation. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Financially Sound. This is not a class. This show is teaching you the secrets employed by many financial advisors for their wealthy clients. My name is Shannon Ryan. I'm a certified financial planner, and I've been helping people like you find their financial peace of mind for 23 years. Most people talking about money today on TV, radio, and in blogs have never sat across the table from a real person with real financial issues. Life is messy and emotional, and what works in textbooks doesn't always work in the real world. We have all made money mistakes. It's time to stop with the guilt and judging yourself for a lack of financial knowledge or planning. It's time to get real and financially sound. I did an interview this week with Women's Day magazine. They were asking me about the small financial mistakes that people make that end up being major mistakes long term. Interesting question. After so many years of sitting across from real people, this is a great question, because often forgetting to make small financial decisions can come back and really bite us, and it costs us a lot more long term. There are three that I'm going to cite here today. The first one, and I think it's an obvious one, but it's one of those things that we talk about that we never do, is setting clear, decisive financial goals. Meaning, what's important to us in our life? And it seems fairly logical. And when you talk to somebody, it's kind of one of those, you know, of course I have financial goals. I want to make a lot of money. I want my investments to do incredibly well. I want to live in a certain place. But they're very broad-based financial decisions. Very rarely do people sit down and become so clear about what's important to them about money that they really have a basis to make everyday decisions on money. And life is about a series of decisions. Wherever you are right now in your life, you are where you're at because of a decision or a series of decisions that you made. You're going to make some great decisions. You're also going to make some really bad decisions. In life, if you make more positive or good decisions towards your desired outcome versus bad, and you'll make some bad, there's a higher probability you're going to get where you want to be in a certain area. And it's not any different with money. It was interesting. A couple years ago, I was in a seminar and I was speaking to a group of women. And towards the end of the seminar, a woman put her hand up and said, "I don't agree with you, Shannon. I don't agree that all financial goals, that if I really desire something and work towards it, can be accomplished. My son is getting ready to go to college. Nothing means more to me than sending him to college and actually paying for the full education. I don't want him to have to get loans, scholarships, or grants." So I asked her, "Where do you live?" She told me she lived in an area that's a fairly affluent area. I asked her if she owned the house. She said, "Yes." I said, "Equity. Do you have equity in the house?" She goes, "Yes, we actually paid off the house. We're getting ready to head into retirement." And I said, "Well, you can do a couple things if you were truly focused on making sure that your son's education is paid for. You can sell the house. You can buy a house of less value and utilize the dollars that you saved for the education, or you can take a home equity line." She looked at me and said, Absolutely not. I don't want to leave this house, Shannon, and I paid it off because I don't want any debt on it." And I said, "So what you're telling me is your desire to have a paid off house is more important than your goal to send your son to college and pay for the entire thing. That's okay. Your financial value is to have your house paid off. If your son has to take out loans, scholarships, or grants, you don't know it, but you're actually probably okay with that because the higher value is to have the house paid off." And she said, no, I want both." And I said, "Right now, it sounds like both isn't within your financial life. If you want to hold on to the house, you would feel better about your financial life if you just said out loud, 'He can get scholarships, loans, and grants. I'm not going to take the money out of the house.'" So she made a decision. So when we're making goals, there's always going to be a finite amount of money. And if we're clear about what's important to us, then selling the house would have been easier for her if the son's education was truly the number one financial goal. So how do you set financial goals and how do you make decisions with those financial goals? Each family has a different set of values. And one of the things that I ask often is, what is going to make you most financially happy over your lifetime? And again, it's a question that most people haven't asked themselves, because we feel that we should say, I want to retire at a certain age. I want to send my kids to college. I want to live in a certain house in a certain area. And I believe that society dictates many times that we feel or we think about financial success for ourselves. The most powerful small decision that you can make that will either end up in a long-term major mistake or a long-term incredible success, maybe even a greater success than you can imagine, is being incredibly clear with yourself, with your spouse, with your family, whoever you're making financial decisions with, about what is important to you about money. The mistake that is made here is that people feel financial goals are stock picking. And if they pick the right stock, if they make enough money, they'll hit their financial goals. Again, is it college versus a house? Is it retirement versus delaying retirement because you want to take more trips prior to retirement? It's making sure that those decisions that you're making every day and every year financially are in alignment with your goals. According to the CFP Household Survey, less than 31% of us have a financial plan, and only 35% of us have enough emergency cash that when something comes up that's not in our plan, that we can cover that emergency. So good decisions, bad decisions, make them consciously and make them against clear financial goals. The second small mistake that I see creates long-term major damage in a financial life is around debt. Right now in the United States, one of the biggest debt concerns that we have actually is around student debt. If you take a look at the numbers in the United States right now with student debt and the growing numbers, it's concerning. People still also use credit card debt excessively, and they are accustomed to using it within their financial lives on a rotating basis. What I hear often is that people want to get out of consumer debt. The mistake that they're making why they're getting out of consumer debt is they're not building their cash reserves at the same time. So here's the second small mistake that ends up into a larger mistake. You've decided that you're going to pay off consumer debt, student debt. You're going to take the next year to year and a half to get yourself in a position where you take this dark cloud of debt away from your shoulders and you want to get beyond it. And you decide you're going to throw every resource you have, cancel trips, minimize lifestyle, and get this done this year as a goal. The mistake that people make is they throw every last resource they have at reducing the debt without building a cash reserve. The number one reason why people end up in consumer debt is because they did not have a proper amount of money in a cash reserve. I call it a cash reserve rather than an emergency fund. The reason why I call it a cash reserve is emergency sounds like it's something that only if the sky is falling, then you can use that money. And that's not the reason why you use credit cards. I have routinely seen people get into credit card debt because they just wanted to take a trip. They wanted to enjoy life and they felt like they deserved it. And they were tired of waiting to save the money. So that's how they ended up in the credit card debt. Cash reserves should be thought of as the same way. If you do not build your cash reserves, meaning take some of the discretionary money on a monthly basis, not only to reduce debt, but to increase your cash reserves, what will happen is as you're reducing your debt, something will happen. Either an opportunity will come up where you'll want to take a trip or do something fun, or more than likely an emergency will happen. The car's going to need new tires. The refrigerator stops working. What is consistent in people's lives that I have found is something happens and cash is needed. You don't have a cash reserve because you've been paying down the debt. Your only choice is to go back to the debt. And you continue the cycle of debt that you've been in. And many times people just surrender to it and say, gosh, you know what? I'm going to be in debt long term. In the beginning, why you're reducing debt, I would like to have a 50-50% ratio, meaning that you're taking 50% of the money that you have to reduce debt beyond your minimums and put it into cash reserves, and 50% to reduce. I like to see cash reserves in the amount of at least 6 months available of what you spend on a monthly basis. And I get it. I think for some of you that may feel so overwhelming. But trust me, when you get there, when you have the debt that is looming over your head paid off and you have a cash reserve, and when opportunities come up, good and bad, so emergencies and opportunities, and you utilize your own cash and then you pay yourself back, what you're simply doing is creating a higher level of discretionary money in your life on a daily basis, meaning more money that you can make choices about around your financial goals because you're not servicing consumer debt and interest rates that are too high. So, point number two, while reducing debt, make sure that you are increasing cash reserves. The third point is looking at risk in your life. This is a topic that most people don't want to talk about. When I sit down and talk about financial goals and investing and people want to talk about stocks and bonds, they don't want to talk about insurance. They don't want to talk about the fact that somebody could die prematurely. If we have wonderful financial plans, what happens if something happens along the way? And after all of these years that I have spent working with clients, what I have found and what I have been on the other side of is several clients that have called me and said, I've just been completely disabled in an accident, or my husband just died at 48 years old. It is devastating, not only personally and emotionally, it's devastating financially. And what happens more than not is people haven't looked at that risk because, gosh, I'm too young. That doesn't happen. It won't happen to me. And by making that small mistake, it ends up making major issues for the survivors, or I've been told by one client, he had to live through it. He was disabled, didn't make any plans for being disabled, and he actually got to survive and see the devastation that he brought onto his family. When I was early in my career, years and years and years ago, I had an experience that really gave me perspective on risk and risk protection. I had a gentleman that I was working with. I was doing a series of seminars for government agencies in Washington, D.C., the FERS and PERS and the TSP programs of the 1990s and the government programs for pensions was something I was fairly knowledgeable on. So I would speak to thousands of people on retirement planning and how to get ready to transition out of their government jobs with their pensions into the retirement lives that they wanted to lead. There was a gentleman in the program who headed all of this up. His name, for the purposes of this broadcast, will be Roger. Roger was a good friend. We did lots of work together. I spoke to thousands of people. He brought me in on a regular basis, and he was incredibly knowledgeable about finances, the pension programs, benefit programs that he had available that he was helping people within his division understand for themselves. He was also a client of mine. And what I knew about Roger is I knew that Roger had cancer in his 30s. When I met Roger, he was in his mid-40s. Roger loved to spend money. Roger enjoyed life. He had a great pension that would ultimately be coming from his federal job. He had a beautiful home, had a wife, and he had two kids at the time that were currently in junior high and high school. He had a great life, but he hadn't saved a lot of money. He also hadn't looked closely at what would happen if something happened to him personally. He had been in remission for over 15 years when I met him from his cancer. So when I was going through his financial analysis, it became quite clear that if Roger died, that the hopes of sending the girls to college and paying for their education, the hope to help his wife Carol retire at the age that they wanted both of them to be retired at and remain living in the house that they lived in would be very difficult based on the insurance that he currently had through his workplace. After doing the analysis, we came up with a number that made sense for him, for his family, and we underwrote a term insurance policy to cover that need. Sat across from Roger delivering the term policy, and he said, you know what, Shannon, I hate insurance premiums. I am not going to pay it. Thank you for pointing it out to me. I can't do it. It's wasted money. And I was disappointed because I was thrilled that after 15 years of remission, because he had had cancer for many, many years, that we were able to get him underwritten and standard. So I was thrilled. But he was the client. He turned the policy down. We went our separate ways. but I am persistent. And so I went several times when I saw him and say, have you rethought about the insurance policy? I'm losing sleep over, you know, at night. I want to make sure your family is protected. Even if we do it with term, I just want it to be least expensive, but let's get you protected. I end up writing 3 different policies on him. And every single time I went to deliver it, he just decided he didn't want to pay the premium. The last time we'd become such great friends, I sat across from him and said, I'm not leaving the table till you sign the policy. You're taking it. This is where we're at. You're my friend. You're my client. I need to know that your dreams are protected. So he signed the policy. Raj and I talked on a regular basis, and I didn't hear from him for about 3 to 4 weeks after that. So I called his office and talked to his secretary and said, is Roger in? I haven't heard from him. I think he's angry at me for pushing insurance and making sure his family was covered. And she started laughing. She said, Shannon, you haven't talked to Roger? And I said, no. She said, he's not in today. You need to call him at home. So I called Roger at home, got him on the phone. And of course, we used to tease each other quite a bit. So I asked him why he was lazy and at home and not at his workplace. And he informed me, he said, where are you, Shannon? I said, in my office. He said, I need to talk to you. Will you sit down? He said, after you, and we used to, again, tease each other. So after you were such a pushy broad is exactly what he said to me. 2 weeks after I signed that policy, I was being wheeled into an emergency room. I was staring at the lights of the ceiling as I was being wheeled down the corridor. And all I could think about was you. Something was going on. I didn't know what it was. It turned out that I was having a major heart attack. The good news is that I survived. I said, well, are you healing? How are things going? He said, Shannon, I'm not done. He said, the cancer's back. It's everywhere. They opened up my chest to take care of my heart, and the cancer's everywhere. I have less than 6 months to live, Shannon. It was one of those defining moments in my life. Roger was only 48 years old. He lived a year later. He died at age 49. But his family had enough money to cover everything and every desire he had. And I will never, ever forget my last conversation with him. The conversation where he sat down with me and just said, I don't want to die, and I don't want to miss dancing at my daughter's weddings. And it's not fair that I'm dying at 49, 48. He didn't know when he was going to actually go. But I die with a peace of mind. And I will shout from the rooftops for the rest of my life, however long that is, to protect your family and to think about insurance. And although it, you know, nobody wants to pay the policies, but at least evaluate what you need and understand what the risks are. I have lived with Roger's story for the last 23 years. I feel very fortunate that it was in the first couple years of my practice as a CFP that I met Roger. I think he taught me the greatest lessons. Although he felt I did so much for him and his family, I learned so much that I've been able to carry to other families. And it is one of the biggest small mistakes that people make, is they don't take the hour or two that it takes, or they don't hire somebody to review all the insurance, not only life insurance, but long-term care is becoming a huge issue with an aging population. If you haven't already been affected by it, as our parents age, it becomes very expensive for caregiving if they need outside care to come in. And it's hurting and actually devastating financial plans of entire families, not just of the elderly parents that didn't prepare, but of the middle-aged children who want to take care of their parents, but end up not realizing their financial dreams because of the money that's being spent. The other concern is disability insurance. If you're unable to work and provide money for the family, where does that leave you? And I know this isn't exciting to talk about or to look at. It really only takes a couple hours to evaluate. And there's a lot of very inexpensive ways to cover these needs. But again, it needs to be considered. Financial planning and taking a look at your overall financial life encompasses many areas. And we've really only talked about 3 today. But what I will share with you is that most people think of financial services as investments, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, great stock tips, what's Apple going to do today? And really what I know with my experience is it's strategies. It's understanding first and foremost what's most important to you. What do you want financially over your lifetime? And then finding the correct financial strategy to employ to make sure that you achieve what's most important to you, which makes you the happiest and achieves what you want and desire over time, and also protects those desires. You're listening to Financially Sound. If you would like your questions answered on the show, please send them to soundofmoney@outlook.com and follow us on Twitter at Sound of Money Radio. You're listening to Financially Sound. If you have questions that you would like to have answered on air, please send me an email at soundofmoney@outlook.com and follow us on Twitter at Sound of Money Radio.